happy Thanksgiving month. It's November 15th, and Steph is here. Hey, Steph.
Hey there.
And we are back.
Yeah, baby. You called it Thanksgiving month.
Yeah.
I call this birthday month.
Oh, that's happy birthday.
Happy
birthday. Yesterday was your birthday.
Yes, it was. And for the second year in a row, my darling husband was traveling.
Aw.
But I will say that I was putting my head down on the pillow the night before my birthday. He was gone. And there was something hard underneath the pillow. I'm like, what the hell? I reach under and he left me a gift and a card.
Oh, that's so sweet.
Yes. And when I woke up yesterday morning, both of my kids presented me with cards. So, you know what? Not too shabby. Then my best friend from high school came up and we went to lunch and down at the Ferry Building in San Francisco. And then she and I took a bicycle cab ride back to my office.
Oh, how fun.
Which was super fun. And I asked the guy, could you please make sure to go up Battery Street so that in case I see any colleagues, I can be sure to wave heartily at them. It was a moment. It was great. It was really, really fun. Yeah.
That's so really anyway, cool.
But you guys have had quite a month over there in your neck of the woods.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
I've missed you.
I know. Well, we were going to do one show last month because I knew I was going to be traveling for the last week. And then all of a sudden, the fire happened. Yeah. And I talked about this on Bob's show, but I'll kind of recap it briefly here. The night that it happened, Bob and I were just sitting watching television. It was Sunday night. And initially, the electricity went out. I don't know what time it was, around 9 or something like that. And then it came back on immediately. So then, I don't know, around 10, 10:30, whatever time it was, the electricity went off and then it stayed off. So we kind of hung out for a little while and waited, and it didn't come back on. So we decided to go to bed. And in the middle of the night, I got up to go to the bathroom. And mainly because I could hear people outside. And I figured that the voices outside were other people who lived in our complex who were talking about, you know, the electricity or whatever. I mean, I could hear many people talking. And then I heard a man say something along the lines of, you know, we'll get it back going, or I don't know, something. And that woke me up. So I went to the bathroom, and then I could hear outside of our front door that there were people mulling around. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden I get a knock on the door, and it's probably around 3:45. So it turns out that it's our neighbor from upstairs, and she was letting me know that the fire had jumped the freeway. And she told us the name of the road, which is Mark West Springs. And mm-hmm. So she, you know, and I said to her, well, is there a mandatory evacuation? She said, no, but people are choosing to leave. So I go to wake Bob up, who's never been in a wildfire, although he has had terrible experiences with fire because his house burnt down twice when he was a kid.
Oh my God.
But I mean, he'd never had that wildfire experience that when you live in California, especially Southern California, I've had many experiences. I've been evacuated before. I've been on the verge of evacuation. So anyway, when I told him what she told me, he wasn't fully awake. So he wasn't really understanding or grasping what I was saying. I said something about Mark West Springs Road, and I think he thought I was talking about some guy named Mark or something. It just didn't compute in his brain yet. And so I, you know, cause he was like half up, half awake, half asleep, didn't understand. So I thought to myself, okay, what am I going to do? Because I thought, well, nobody's evacuated us, so I'm just going to go back to sleep. So then I think, did I lock the door? And I go to lock the door, and all of a sudden I hear keys going into the keyhole, and I start freaking out, and I'm like, what's going on? And I'm screaming, and it was the neighbor from upstairs who lived directly above me, who just, there was no electricity. So she just mistakenly thought she was at her own apartment. She was at ours. So anyway, wake up around five. Bob and I both woke up around 5, and he had a much better understanding of what was happening and had signed up to the alerts on his phone. And when we looked outside, the sky was orange. Yeah. And so we knew there was this fire, but it didn't feel like it was an immediate threat. We weren't hearing anybody running around outside screaming about it. So, we stayed, and we were never evacuated. We didn't have electricity for a week, and we didn't have hot water for about a week, which was horrible. And we were constantly in fear of the wind changing direction. And after all was said and done, I mean, it was so awful because, you know, I have a cat and we didn't want to leave her completely alone in case there was an evacuation and we couldn't get back to her. So somebody always had to be here with her. And when Miranda. Miranda, when we were driving around, you know, going to the store and all of that, the only radio stations were basically just, you know, local radio stations. And they were talking about, you know, what had burned down, and they were getting a lot of wrong information. But we did know that a neighborhood not very far away from us, a whole neighborhood was just decimated, and it looked like a bomb hit it. And there was a trailer park, I think it's called Journey's End, which is like a horrible name for a senior, like a senior Journey's End of your journey here. But it's gone now, and it really looks like a bomb hit it. I mean, and what was so frightening and horrible about this fire was that it didn't just affect the hills and the foothills. I mean, it jumped the freeway, and it jumped over into neighborhoods in the concrete area of the city. And yeah. It was devastating and depressing and awful. And, you know, the winds, we kept getting reports that the winds may be kicking up, and you just didn't know. And then making matters worse, on the night that we hear, okay, the winds are going to be kicking up. Bob was in the other room and he was watching his cell phone, and whatever he was watching had some alarm sound on it. So I'm out in the living room and I hear this alarm sound, and I'm thinking that it's coming from our building.
it's your boyfriend on the couch. He's like with his iPhone.
I'm like, oh my God. But we had to go, like, we had a phone charger, and then the Starbucks up the street, they had electricity, so we could go charge our stuff and have, you know, internet on the phone and Wi-Fi and all that. But it was freaking awful. It was so awful. Yeah. And our decision to move back east was only solidified. It was like, you know, I mean, I know that for the rest of my life that I don't live in California, I'll always miss California because California has so many awesome things. But certainly I'm not going to miss the wildfires.
No. And I then, of course, was immediately thinking of you, couldn't get through to you.
And you were so nice, by the way, offering your home. I can't tell you how nice and wonderful that was of you. We both really appreciated it.
Oh, come on. Please. It's like, that's what people do. But I was writing to your mom like, oh my God, where are they? And, you know, I woke up in Oakland in the middle of the night because my throat hurt, and yeah. I thought, you know, the house next to us, we're in Upper Rockridge. The house next to us burned down in the Oakland fire, oh, you know, yeah, back in the 90s. And so we've got this big cedar tree, and I'm like, that thing's got to come out. We need to, you know, and it just starts a chain reaction of terror.
Yeah.
And then you're seeing this. How long did it take to contain that fire, you guys?
It was days. It was days. And
at least,
yeah,
right?
And I have. It was probably a full week, and my girlfriend lived in the heat of it, literally. I think the house across the street from hers burnt down, and she and her kids, her husband was out of town, and she and her kids had to wake up at 2 a.m. and bolt. And they have a friend who lives in another area that the flames didn't get his house, but they did ruin his lawn, and I guess he had some kind of vehicle that burned down, you know, all their hoses and fences and whatever they were growing in their garden. All that stuff was gone, and fortunately both of them didn't lose their homes, but it got so close to my girlfriend's house that you know, part of her lawn was singed. So it was firefighters and neighbors, and I don't know how there were neighbors, because she said neighbors helped, but I don't understand how that works when you're evacuated. Maybe some people stayed, I don't know. But she was right in the thick of all of it. And, you know, and then there's this beautiful stretch of like mountain kind of, or hills, whatever, mountain hills, called Fountain Grove. And it's where the people with money live. And there were just gorgeous homes. And there was this beautiful Fountain Grove Inn right on Mendocino Avenue and Fountain Grove on the corner. That was gone. And all these homes on Fountain Grove were just also decimated. I saw a little bit when I returned from my trip from the DC area, but I drove a little bit into what's called Coffee Park, which is completely gone now. Mm-hmm. My mother was actually looking at homes when she moved here in, I think, 2008. I'm really glad she didn't choose that. And I'm really glad she's gone. I'm glad that she got out before the fires hit, because I don't know if it would have affected her ability to sell her condo. So I'm glad that she was able to get out. And, you know, but it was just so horrible. It's just it's so, and fire, as Bob and I have talked about time and again, it's like, you know, I mean, all natural disasters are scary. So I'm not trying to say, you know, oh, we had it worse. But the thing with fire is that it seems evil. And mm-hmm. and it's like, if there's a flood, which is horrible, you can at least like swim, but a fire, man, just it feels evil and angry. You know, it just has this anger to it. And it's an alive thing. Yep. It's energy that's just endless. And it's something that I never want to have to deal with. I mean, living in Southern California, as I said, I lived in Laurel Canyon and I had to be evacuated in the fire that burnt down Mackenzie Phillips' house. And I think it was like 1980. The house that I was living in at the time wasn't touched, thankfully. But I also, right before I moved to Northern California, I lived in Northern Glendale, which was basically the La Cañada and I can't remember the other law. Whatever it is, the law something. Anyway, it was basically at the foothills. And my front window was all, or I should say my front wall was all window. And I was facing the San Gabriel Mountains. And we had the station fire, which was the largest, I believe, at the time, fire in California's history. And I could just watch the mountains burning down every day. But interestingly, no houses were lost. And, you know, no businesses, no homes, no people. And that fire, it took a while to be contained. And every day I was getting robocalls for about a week, and it was like 106 degrees outside. It was so awful. And of course the air quality was terrible, but I was never evacuated in that. And then, you know, there's also just been the other fires that all would happen at the same time. And even if you lived far away from them, you would go out to your car and your car would be covered with ash because it was just blowing around.
The sky looked scary.
Yeah, it was ominous.
But I'm hopefully, you know, people have homeowners insurance and people who were able to salvage something through that, you know. And you've got to rebuild, and there are people displaced. And what does that do? You know, how do you work and go and live? Like, what happens? Because, you know, now everybody's clamoring for temporary housing, mm-hmm. and yet they still have their same job.
If they have their job, because some of them have businesses burned down too.
Right. Luther Burbank Center.
Yeah.
Did I get that? Did I hear that right?
Yes.
That's gone.
Yes.
I mean, like these iconic structures think of how many people are employed just there. And
right.
The list just goes on and on. But hopefully, I think good people come out of the woodwork and amidst, to help victims of the fire or victims of the floods and, mm-hmm. you know, all of these natural disasters, it's nice to see that happening. And then, you know, we have this fucked up government mm-hmm. who lets the people in Puerto Rico die mm-hmm. and they still don't have power because, I mean, there's no other reason besides the fact that they're brown. I can't come up with another reason why those folks have not been receiving aid, and because they have a mouthy mayor. Who right. isn't going to stand for his shit or for this administration shit? I mean, you know, we've got. I think
she's a nasty woman.
Oh God, I love that woman.
I know.
I through this time, like starting with the hurricanes and what happened in Florida and in Houston and the surrounding areas there, and then on to the fire and then Puerto Rico and Mexico City and I sometimes have to sit back and just say, okay, here's what I have that's positive today. I have a family. I have friends. I have, you know, that sort of truth and that, like, I know that there's love and positivity there. And so I just keep saying to myself, all right, so just be, you know, it sounds so obnoxious and Pollyanna, but it's like, okay, I'm just going to be the best person I can today, even though I'm, you know, still having road rage and things like that. But I have to try to hang on to these little glimmers of hope through these times. And then Paul Manafort's indicted.
I know.
And all of a sudden, the mania goes into the positive direction once again.
Exactly. Well, first of all, I just want to say, I don't think you're being a Pollyanna. I mean, I notice that when I'm just out and about, that I do my best to make sure that I'm friendly toward everybody. And mm-hmm. and I don't want people to think I'm like Trump. You know what I mean? It's like, so well aware of, if I'm around people who are not white, I feel like I don't want them to think, and I don't know what that says about me. I just want to make sure people feel like comfortable. You know, mm-hmm. I feel mm-hmm. like people don't feel comfortable in this environment, and I want to do what I can, because I can't imagine what it must be like to be a black or brown person walking around and having some, you know, crazed white person start screaming horrible things at them. And I'm with you guys. mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I'm with you. Not everybody is horrible. And that's just such a fucking horrible way to live your life. But, right. you know, going back to the fact that I don't think that makes you Pollyanna. I think that just, we all have to find, and we're going to get to that Paul Manafort in a second. We all have to find ways to live in the positive, because there's so much negative going on. Right. That said, we are living history, and it's exciting. Whether it's horrible or not, it's totally exciting. And before I left to go to the East Coast, I said something to Bob, like, you know, I wonder what's going to happen while I'm gone. Oh my God, a whole lot of things.
Lord,
one of the
mercy.
First things that happened was freaking Roger Stone got banned from Twitter. I mean, he's still on it. He's got another account, but he got banned. And I was like, woo-hoo.
He's so gross.
Is
there I almost just said, is there a grosser person? And then immediately, yes. like, five other names came to mind.
Yeah, like Stephen Miller and Donald Trump.
Oh, and Judge Roy Moore.
Oh, yeah.
And yeah, I mean, like, we have so much to talk about. Jesus, all the stuff that has happened since you and I have been apart. But,
I know. Well, the big thing is Manafort.
The big thing is Manafort, because what that said, you know, when we're all down in the dumps and the shit is hitting the fan and the disasters are happening, And we didn't have any good news for a while.
Yeah.
You know? And then the Manafort, and what's that dude's name? Bob Gates?
Yeah.
No, Bob.
Well, Papadopoulos.
And and, you know, the coffee boy comes, yes. and he's saving the day for the world. You know?
That was awesome. And you know, it really gave me a sense, I'm going to guess, that the timing of the Papadopoulos story was on purpose. And, you know, because first you hear Manafort and then you hear this. Now, right. most recently, The Atlantic came out with the story that Don Jr. was in correspondence with WikiLeaks for like 10 months. So that was just the other day. So what I think is that leak or that story also was about timing. And I just wonder how long until Don Jr. is indicted. Like, are we going to get a Thanksgiving surprise? I hope
I hope so. You know,
except that Dotard's going to freak out, or Dotard, or whatever.
Well, but this goes back to who's the dude that wrote John Le Carre, Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy. Mm-hmm. He did an interview a few months ago with Terry Gross about how things work and about how, you know, Christopher Steele. That's all for sure. You know, I was reading a Guardian article about Christopher Steele, like. He was embedded in Russia with MI6 for years. Like, this dude knows what's going on. Mm-hmm. What's happening here is they're going to play, and Mueller's so brilliant.
Yes.
And we only have a glimpse into what he's capable of. Can you imagine what we don't know that's happening behind the scenes?
I know.
And he's very much by design. You know, there was a raid at Paul Manafort's house in the early hours of the morning.
Pre-dawn
and then
raid.
He's indicted. The pre-dawn raid. It's not just the neighbor putting the key in the door because the lights are out. It's this shit is real right here. And so that, you know, all by design, sending a message.
Yeah.
And so everybody's crapping their pants. Can you imagine the feces filled pants among that Trump crew?
Oh my God.
I mean, do you think Ivanka has had a decent night's sleep since January 20th?
I don't know, because she certainly lives in another world. So who the hell knows what they tell themselves?
Yeah, who knows? But I get off track because there's just so much to talk about. But okay, so then there's Manafort. Then we've got Flynn. And you know,
Flynn. Oh, God, and then Flynn.
Flynn and Flynn Jr. I know he's not a junior, but he is a junior. Michael Flynn Jr. These asshole children of these corrupt bastards. But Flynn cried, supposedly, broke down, right. Don't hurt my son. Don't mm-hmm. punish my son. So my husband this morning says, I go, where's that goddamn Flynn indictment? And he goes, Honey, that's not happening because I bet you he is just singing like a bird to save his son.
Although there is the argument that they believe they will get pardoned. So I don't, I'm not sure. I saw this argument on Twitter by one of the, I think it was that Renato Mariotti or whatever.
Love him.
Yeah. I think it was him. And I'm not sure, what the deal is with the Flynn father and son team. Mm-hmm. But, and again, I don't know. Because the person that no one ever talks about is Schneiderman, the New York right. Attorney General, who was mm-hmm. also investigating Trump and his campaign for, illegal money laundering as well as Russian collusion. So mm-hmm. I don't mm-hmm. know what the Flynn investigation, what the Flynn father and son team, if they can be part of that. In a New York thing. What I mean?
I don't know that either.
Because the deal is, but if he finds them guilty, Trump can pardon
whoever. He can pardon them, but if Doug Jones wins in Alabama, don't you think that, if Trump pardons two very guilty people, one of whom was guilty of pot, he was about to kidnap.
Yeah.
A Turkish insane. Cleric for $15 million. I mean, these people are guilty of sin. The fact that Republicans like Mitch McConnell and Lindsey Graham are saying, step aside, Roy Moore, makes me feel like they know there's no way out unless they're at this point of just self-preservation mm-hmm. now.
Yeah.
And having a moral compass. Like, they may not have... 2018, that they just need to survive right now.
Yeah.
And the hopes of keeping the Republican Party intact, I think, is on the line at this moment. So if he, I don't know what the disaster, I'd love to hear what Bob has to say about this because Bob's written some really I love Bob's articles on Salon and the Daily Banter because it's kind of like, talk to me like I'm a 4-year-old. Like it's shit that I can take in mm-hmm. and really walk away and go, oh yeah, that's how it works.
Bob
Seska. there's got to be a repercussion if Trump pardons these clearly guilty people. Like, do you honestly think that the Senate is going to sit for that, given the state of the Republican Party right now?
I don't
now
know.
And the fact,
you know what?
I don't know
put,
either.
I wouldn't put anything past them. I don't trust them at all. Any, all of a sudden Mitch McConnell now believes the women, but he doesn't believe the women who are accusing Trump.
Well,
so,
that's next.
It just, whatever they do, it's like you said, it's self-preservation and it's all about watching their ass. They mm-hmm. don't mean a goddamn thing they say. They're just saying what they think they need to say because they are floundering right now in a way we've never, ever, ever seen. And right. so, when it comes down to Flynn, when it comes down to, at least I don't know where Don Jr. lives. Doesn't he live in, does he live in New York or did he live in New York? Do they have a home in New York? I mean, I don't know what Eric Schneiderman, New York Attorney General Eric Schneiderman will be able to do. But what I do know is that first of all, he has a fucking hard-on for the president. He can't stand him. And every single time you look at his Twitter feed, he only sticks to the things that he can talk about publicly, and it's never about the investigation. It's always about, the Muslim ban or, one day he completely went off on the Trump administration for the way they treat women and that detained girl who they were trying to force to have or to keep the baby instead of having an abortion. So he'll go off on Trump for things like that. But it just shows you that the guy can't fucking stand him. And he's really smart. And both he and Mueller are working together. So I would imagine that they are anticipating the absolute worst from Trump. And I think that they're incorporating that into how they're going to proceed. So, and mm-hmm. that makes me mm-hmm. think in terms of, this latest story that came out about Don Jr. having WikiLeaks communication for 10 months. Again, I do think that that's all part of the part of the whole show. And as you know, we've heard on multiple shows, whether it's Rachel Maddow or Lawrence, I mean, this is a long game. It's not mm-hmm. like this is going to, you know, just be all finished in a few weeks. It's not going to be over. It's going to keep going. And, you know, I was watching Rachel last night and it was making me really realize how important it is that even though we feel very, very impatient, each little thing, like watching Jeff Sessions yesterday lie again.
Lie his balls off. So yeah. He's perjured himself now twice.
Yeah. I mean, and slowly but surely, these hearings are creating their own narrative along with everything else that's being dropped. So it's kind of better to, even though it's not necessarily better for the country, because God only knows what's going to happen with Trump and right, North Korea right. and whatever else. But ugh. And the fact that I think a Russian agent is running our country and Russian agents are running our country and Tillerson
right.
is destroying the State Department and all of that. But in the end, uh-huh. it's like the idea that this slow drip of news is kind of getting us all ramped up and prepared for the eventual major ball dropping. Right. And it makes it much more difficult to argue against. Of course, there will always be people who will, you know, kick and scream, but it'll be so clear. There's too many. It's not just the intelligence. It's not just Mueller. It's coming from so many different angles that mm-hmm. you can't just explain it away and be taken seriously.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But that said, I do kind of wish that things would ramp up just a little bit faster.
I know. I feel like we haven't had any really delicious news this week.
No,
yet.
We haven't. We need an indictment before Thanksgiving. Damn it.
I know. I'm looking. I think Friday is going to be a good news day again. You know, I do feel a lot better. We had a really you and I, when we talked to John Pavlovitz, mm-hmm. we were both just sort of burnt. And exhausted and emotionally just beaten down. Mm-hmm. And I feel a lot better now, you know, 2 months later, mm-hmm. Because it seems kind of manageable. Unless, you know, the nukes happen and then, well, here we are. Mm-hmm. Bye-bye. It's really nice knowing you.
Really?
But because, you know, we're going to be ground zero, which yeah. is kind of, you know, I almost consider that a blessing.
Yeah, no, I mean, if there's going to be nukes, just take me now. I don't want to live in a post-nuclear world.
Take me now. I just hope, yeah, oh, Jesus Christ, I can't believe we're having that conversation.
Let's just hope and pray. Thoughts and prayers that never happens, right?
Yeah, right. I don't know what's going to happen. I think it's going to happen a lot sooner than we hope. But it's nice to tell ourselves, hey, you know what? Let's just sit back. Let's take it in dribs and drabs. The work is being done. They all say it. All the experts say it. All the former, you know, people that worked for Mueller, people who know his style, lawyers who's the dude who was in charge of the DEA and he stepped down because he was uncomfortable with the way things
were
running. Oh, yeah.
I don't know his name, but I know who you're talking
I can't remember his name. Anyway, great, great interview. Really calm guy. He's like, the right people and the most capable people in the world have all the information they need.
Yeah.
And so, you know what? It's going to be great. And then I'm just going to go on a popcorn diet and I'm just going to sit and I'm going to shove it into my face and it's going to be beautiful. It's going to be beautiful. And then there's Schneiderman.
I know.
You know, so it's going to be beautiful from all angles.
It will.
When Don Jr. and when that bitch, Jared Kushner... When the hammer comes down on those two, I can't even tell you.
I just
you,
want Don Jr. to go to jail so badly.
I want Jared to go to jail too. And
me
I
too.
Want that little
want
fate, that stupid smirk
yeah.
wiped off his face. You know, and then, and here's what's going to happen. And Ivanka, she's going to come out unscathed because they'll work a deal. But Jared will be in jail. And Ivanka is going to divorce him while he's in jail and hook up with some, you know, rich guy and just go into hiding.
And
this will be it.
And
someone else is going to raise.
And she'll be sucking on her champagne
on her
popsicles.
Champagne pops, right? Don't choke.
You know.
Yeah.
Now, one thing that we haven't been able to talk about because we haven't done a show is all the stuff about sexual harassment, Weinstein, Louis C.K., Kevin Spacey. Boy, that, you know,
boy, oh boy.
That dropped while the fire was happening, the Weinstein story. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I have to say, just before that, I was telling you that I didn't feel like I felt I was lost. I felt like I didn't understand really how to be the feminist anymore, because writing feminist articles no longer had the same punch that it once did. And, you know, if you want to write about abortion, no one cares. It became like the new climate change. Nobody cared. All of a sudden, the story drops. Now it's the new thing. And it kind of revitalized my initial, you know, social media activism, where when I first got into all of this, it was about women's issues and voting. I mean, I wrote a book called American Woman, The Pole Dance, P-O-L-L dance. And, you know, and that was the focus. It was on feminism, women's rights, and the importance of voting. And so, you know, just to cut to the chase, and we can talk about this in detail with all of them, and I also want to bring up George Takei. I think this has really, I mean, all of the feminist stuff that I've done over, I'd say since 2012, all the feminist articles that I've written, all the awareness that I have now, even when I've been wrong, and even when I've participated in patriarchal behaviors, it's all hitting me so clearly how much more there is than I ever even imagined, even 3 years ago when I was thinking that I understood it completely, because it made me, it's forced me to look back on my own life and you know, you spot, and I do consider myself fortunate in part because I'm 6 feet tall. I have broad shoulders, a deep voice, a commanding presence, and I'm certainly not the easiest target for men. Because they just look at me and they think, if I even try anything with her, she's going to give me a problem. She'll be a problem. So they leave me alone. And not all of them, but a lot of them. So I've been fortunate that way. But I still have experienced, you know, being silenced. I've experienced sexual harassment. I've experienced men being completely inappropriate with me. And it really has opened my eyes even more to, you know, while we're grateful that we have a country that, you know, it feels more equal than it really is, but women still have the opportunities to, you know, to be professional and successful professionals. You know, you can look in the comedy world and see, wow, you know what? There would literally be more female comics if the male comics, the sexist male comics, I should say, weren't so, you know, like they keep women out. There was right. an article written by some male, he's a gay male comic, and he just spelled it out. And he said, you know, young male comics usually are fortunate to get a male mentor who is, you know, already made, and that's how they kind of come up. So it's very mm-hmm. difficult for female comics, because it's usually the male comics who are chosen that they're going to mentor. And, you know, it's harder. It's much harder in the music business and in every business. It's just every harder business. For women. And now it's finally getting to the point, at least online, where the not all men screamers have quieted down. Occasionally they pop up, but it's like, just fucking stop it with the not all men. We know it. We don't want to hear it. I hear about how evil feminists are all day long, and I'm not screaming about not all feminists, because right, it's right. just, give me a fucking break. Yeah. So, you know, I mean, this, I think, I mean, they've all hurt, you know, to hear Kevin Spacey, Louis C.K., that was really hard. And then they came out, somebody accused George Takei. And what I'm seeing, and I want to hear what you think about this, but what I'm seeing is people are saying, well, why, you know, you can't just ignore what's, you know, the allegation about against George Takei because you like him. Well, as far as I'm concerned, while I like him, he's not, I don't like freak out over him. It's one person, and it's different than having corroborating witnesses or people who have experienced. It's not like 10 people have come out. It's one person. So that case, it's like, okay, it's hard to tell. It's hard to tell when you just got a he said, she said, or he said, but when you have a whole bunch of people coming out and saying, yes, this happened to me too, or yes, this person told me this story. When you have one person who has a story against another person and nothing else, it's, you know, it's like, well, how can you just automatically assume that George Takei is guilty. It doesn't mean that I'm preferring him because I like him. I would say the same thing for anybody.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care if they're Republican.
Did you not hear that the George Takei story, it is possibly falsified, and they were saying it was a Russian bot came out with it.
I didn't hear that.
Okay. It was a weird, I read the whole story because I love George Takei, and George Takei is a face of the resistance, and George Takei is, you know, he lived in, not a concentration camp. Displaced as a Japanese American
internment camp.
Sorry. Thank you. He's a gay man. He's outspoken, on everything that we care about.
Right.
Anyone who is marginalized, and then again, in addition to that, for what's right and humane and decent, and he's got a huge platform. The story seemed weird to me. I love Louis C.K., loved him as a performer, loved Kevin Spacey, one of my favorite actors.
Me too.
Done. Yeah, I'm done.
Me too.
Okay, Takei's story, the statement reads weird, okay? And so we'll see, and because it's only one, I mean...
Right.
I'd like to know more information, but you know, if George Takei is that person, then shame on him. And you can't do that to people. Just as, you know, Louis C.K.'s apology statement, I'm going to sit back and listen for a little while. I don't care. You took advantage of women and you didn't need to have four paragraphs to say you fucked up. Mm-hmm. Just come out and say, I was a man of power. I abused that power and I made these women watch me jack off, and that is wrong. And I'm going to go away for a little while, and I am, you know, going to do my best to make this right. Mm-hmm. If that's even possible. That's the way you apologize for that kind of stuff. It's not by saying, I asked their permission before I took my dick out.
Yeah.
You know what? And you did it anyway, fuck face.
Yeah.
And you took advantage of women who were clawing their way to just have a career.
Yeah.
And they felt obligated to sit and watch
you. And
he
knew it.
And he knew it, and he abused that power. And then anybody that spoke of it, or even imagined that they were going to speak of it in circles, whether publicly or just whisper at a party, they were struck down by Louis C.K.'s manager, mm-hmm. and they were told to be nice. Mm-hmm. And you know what? I'm not ever, ever going to be nice.
No.
When, you know, the first time, I mean, let's not go to the first time where something weird or untoward happened when an adult man preyed upon me as a little kid. I was never sexually molested as a child.
Mm-hmm, me neither.
But I had really weird, untoward is the right word, things said to me.
Mm-hmm.
I was grabbed and kissed by an adult man at a family gathering when I was 8. I was whistled at by the butcher when I had a halter top on when I was 8. I was chased home on my bike, also at 8, riding through the campus at Stanford University, laying my bike down and hopping a fence, standing on the other side of the fence, and the student who chased me down said, "Damn it, you were too fast for me." Like, weird shit where it doesn't take a mature person to understand that that's wrong. It doesn't take a person above the age of 8 to know that if that motherfucker had caught me,
mm-hmm.
some weird shit would have gone down.
Yeah.
Then fast forward to being a woman trying to make something of herself in the professional world, mm-hmm. and having a client say, "Sure, I'll renew your contract if you suck my dick."
Oh my God.
Club owner in the city of San Jose. I mean, I'll say his name if you want. I looked him up. After the Harvey Weinstein thing came down, I didn't suck his dick. I think I said something to the effect of, "Who would do that?" And then he named a woman at a competing radio station who did. And I said, "My God, I'd rather like put a German Shepherd's dick in my mouth." And I left and like immediately replaced his business with like a bong shop and I think a bail bondsman. It was rock and roll radio. What do you want?
Yeah.
But you know, that was just the first of many different instances in my career as a woman in my 20s where, you know, I had a boss, thank God, a male boss who told me, "When you go into the car dealerships, Don't you dare wear a skirt. Don't give them any reason to be lecherous. What they need to know from you is that you know the business and you've got a great brain in between your ears. And thank God for him.
Funny because that he thought that a skirt makes men lecherous, though. Isn't that a sad? I mean, he sounds like a good guy, but
right. it was the early 90s, exactly. And he grew up his father owned a used car dealership. He said, men are pigs.
Yeah.
He said, you're smart. No, I'm just kidding. You know what I mean, though.
I know.
I mean, so many times in my career have these things come up. Oh, I blew the general manager to get this really killer promotion because I beat out two men who had been in the business longer than me. No, actually, that's not the case. I was better than them. That's why they gave me the promotion.
Right.
Or she's Mexican. It was they were checking a box. Guess what? I won't stand for that shit, and I'll be loud and I'll be obnoxious. And guess what? I still have a job. I'm still a sought after employee, but there are women who don't have commanding, presences and who don't have mouths on them like you and I do.
Yeah.
Who eat shit every single day. And as fucked up as this Harvey Weinstein stuff is, and as, you know, as horrible as it is to have been groped or to have been marginalized or told you got a promotion because you blew him or whatever, mm-hmm. I'm glad this is coming out, and I'm glad that there are decent men and women across the board who just aren't going to stand for this stuff, and hopefully. Hopefully it means that for the future, there's going to be less of it. There's going to be less of it. I think people are shitting themselves.
I still think we have a long way to go.
We have a really long way to go.
But it's like something cracked open. And I don't know who it was, but somebody mentioned that this feels similar to the women's movement in the 70s, where, mm-hmm. Actual change happened. And, there's a meme that's going around, and I think this perfectly illustrates it for all the men who have the need to remind us, not all men. So, okay, this is the meme. It says men, not all men, and then men to their daughters. Yes, all men, every single one of them. And that is so true, because so many times when, men are, in fact, I like to watch my stupid Real Housewives shows that I know they're stupid, so I don't want to hear it. Not from you, but just from people listening.
I
know they're
shit.
Stupid. I just know they're dumb and stupid. But I watch The Real Housewives of New Jersey. And so one of the fathers, who's very Italian, was having that talk with his daughter, and he was basically telling her that you're not allowed out of the house until you're 35 because all men are pigs, and all men, I know what's in their minds. So it's like interesting how when you, make a comment on social media or when you're with a group of men and there's so many men rushing to tell you that it's not all men, the story changes when they're talking to their own daughters. And that's when the truth comes out. So, mm-hmm. Of course, it's not all men. We all understand that not all men are rapists and not all men are going to be sexual harassers. But enough of them are, and they've gotten away with it for way too long. And, I was thinking about this, and I was thinking, and this kind of brings me back to feeling like I finally found another kind of like refreshed view of my social media activism, because I thought, what's the answer? We're going to argue about this all day long. And there was an NPR article that came out not long ago about how there's sexual harassment classes in workplaces that don't really work. So what's the answer? And then, duh, the answer is elect more progressive women. That's the answer. And I'm just going to keep pushing that. More women have to run. More women have to get elected. And fortunately, we saw the Virginia elections and the New Jersey elections that happened last week were so exciting and inspiring, because a woman who was upset that her, I don't know what he was. He wasn't a Congress guy, but
he was her city councilman, the prick in New Jersey.
Was that the one where he made fun of the women's march and she ran
against
him?
Yeah, are they going to be home in time to cook us dinner? Yeah. And she won.
So it's like, there's that one. And then there's the woman who, I don't know how to pronounce her name, Dana something, the transgender.
Danica Rome.
Yes, who ran against the guy who wrote the freaking transgender bathroom ban bill or whatever, and she won. Mm-hmm. Yep. And two freaking trans people won. And I mean, just like the people who won were diverse. They weren't older white males. Mm-mm. They knocked all the older white males out. And out of 15 seats, 11, and I think in Virginia, 11 women won. Mm-hmm. This is how we're going to eventually get to a more equal and fair society, especially when it comes with sexual harassment, because women understand sexual harassment a lot more than men. You know, I think that what we're seeing is when men are sharing their Me Too stories, it's usually about when they were boys. Mm-hmm. So it's not like they were 25 and getting molested by another man. It's when they were boys and not as physically strong. So I think that even though men have experienced harassment and abuse and rape at the hands of other men, it's slightly different because with women, it doesn't stop once they hit a certain age. It just continues. And so we've had the experience, decades and centuries of experience, and we have a unique perspective. Like, for instance, Kristen Gillibrand is trying to get third parties to investigate sexual assault in the military, because oftentimes a woman is raped by her commanding officer. And then who does she have to report the rape to? Her commanding officer. So mm-hmm. we need a third party. And, right. you know, and then you get a man, like my uncle is Sicilian. And when I was back East, my mom had like a little family dinner. And so we were all talking about the Me Too thing, and it came up, and he said, and he just, you know, he's older and he's from Sicily and he's certainly very old school. And he said something along the lines of, well, she should just report him. And so I chimed in. I'm like, well, that doesn't always work. Women who report sexual assault or harassment often are fired or they're demoted. They're not believed. And so he kept shaking his head and he's like, well, that's just wrong. And she should report him. And I said, but you don't understand. What if she has a kid? What if she's a single mother? And then she looks like a troublemaker and loses her job. And he just kept arguing. I thought my mom was going to fucking bite his head off. My mom started like screeching at him. And, you know, all the women at the table were just, he never got it though. He just never got it in his mind.
He
just thought, well, that's wrong and that shouldn't happen and easy peasy. And it's like, no, it's not like that. We need women. We need to have a real fair split of men and women who are creating legislation and enforcing these laws. And then we'll start to see smashing of the patriarchy.
Right. Correct. 100%. Yes. And it's beginning. Yeah. Talk about having patience for something. I mean, we've waited so long just to be viewed as equals, and we still are not.
No, and it's still not in the Constitution.
Right, exactly.
We still need to ratify the ERA. And again, if we had more female, or I should say woman, congressional representatives, there would be a much easier chance to get it, because we need Congress to lift that expired deadline to the Equal Rights Amendment that happened, I think, in 1982 or 83. And then we only need two more states to be ratified, and then we're a done deal. We're in.
And then, finally, geez, 2017.
But it's really scary to those men in power who don't want to let go. And tough shit.
I know. God. Well, you know, we got a lot of stuff we have to worry about. And I mean, to concern ourselves with, and we can work toward. I mean, every day. You know what's funny? Hmm. One time, I've never been the person that would not speak up. I just haven't been. And when I was in eighth grade, I was with my friend Lisa, and we were sitting on the grass at Valco Village in Cupertino waiting for the bus to take us back home. We, you know, cruised the mall all day. And there was a man, like a nicely dressed man, with a members only jacket folded gently over his forearm. And he had his arm, you know, bent, and it was in front of his crotch. And he's looking around. And I'm seeing him, and I'm like, he's got this weird body language, right? Then he opens his arm up, and his fly is down. And I'm like, oh my God, Lisa, check this out. Dude's got his fly down. And then he covers it back up, and then I look back, and he opens his arm up again to expose his crotchal region. And it's zipped down, and the tip of his penis is... I know. And I went, ew! I was 12 or 13. Ew, you're disgusting. Oh my God, everybody, look, he's trying to show his penis. And he went running like a little bitch.
Good.
Just running away. And I wish my dad was alive for these kinds of stories, because it's like, you know what, Dad? I got your balls.
Yeah.
Because like nobody, that's not right.
Yeah.
And you know, we just need to tell our kids that's not right, and our people and our fellow adult women and men, mm-hmm. that ain't right. We gotta scream. We gotta shout. We gotta pull those people out of the mainstream, mm-hmm. and say, no, no, no.
And but
no more.
And mostly we need an environment where people feel that if they do scream, that they're not going to be ignored or shamed or worse. You know, and that's why it always goes back to electing progressive women.
Right, right, right. One last thing, and I just want to say, you know who Terry Crews is?
Yes.
Did you read his statement today or
not
hear about
the one
his
today.
Appearance?
I did hear about it, but I didn't hear what he said.
So he used to be represented. He's an actor on Brooklyn Nine-Nine or whatever mm-hmm. it is. I don't. It's supposed to be a great show.
He was the father on Everybody Hates Chris too.
Yes, and he was represented by an agent at William Morris Endeavor. You know, the big, huge agency. They represent unbelievably popular, wildly popular celebrities, and they were at an event earlier this year, and one of the agents who's in charge of like motion picture division or something, his name is Adam Venet or something like this. Anyway, he saw Terry and his wife walk into the function. He looked over at Terry and started like licking his lips and like making his tongue come out at him. And Terry was like, what the fuck is this? And then the guy walks up to him and Terry extends his hand and he's still got the tongue hanging out of his mouth, which is weird enough. And then he grabbed his crotch.
Ew, well, see, there I was wrong about
and
just
the,
boys.
And right. And his and Terry Crews is a big dude. Like,
yeah.
This is no, like, little man you're just going to. But here again, the Adam, whatever his last name is, Venet, has power.
Yeah.
And he knows it. And Terry goes, what are you doing? And the guy goes, he goes, get your hands off of me. And I'm going to report this or whatever the word, you know, whatever mm-hmm. the exchange was. And he goes, who's going to believe you? Do you ever want to work again?
Yeah.
Right. And he came out today. He said he's never felt so emasculated, humiliated, victimized mm-hmm. in his life. And it's like the first thought on his mind when he wakes up, like, did that really happen?
Yeah.
And here, and so, you know, I love that this man came out and is openly, because he said an unnamed executive.
Yeah.
And he just said, screw it. I've got to put it out there. Mm-hmm. Because if it's happening to me,
right.
And his wife watched it happen. Okay. These people, the power that they have and that they wield, there's nothing that stops them.
No.
But now there is something that stops them because people aren't shutting their mouths.
Woohoo!
So anyway, yeah. Woo! All right.
Well,
next.
Well, hold on. So I just want to say that if you're listening to the show, please support us by becoming a monthly subscriber at patreon.com/startmeup. And you know, you can pledge anything you want. You can pledge a dollar. You can just pledge a dollar a month and that would totally help. Or you can do $5, which is going to take us into the next segment. You'll get to hear the next segment, which is called End Another Thing. And we're going to continue talking about some of the sexism and talk a little bit about Thanksgiving and some other fun stuff that you just have to pay $5 to listen to, or you can just
donate
whatever you want monthly to support independent podcasters.
Yes, and we appreciate it.
All right, well, it was such a great show. I mean, I could sit here for two more hours, but
I know.
We'll just go over to End Another Thing. So thank you guys for listening, and see you end another, and I can't even talk. How can I be sure you're breaking all the rules? How can I be